We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. Today we are going to dive into RotoWire's Dynasty mock that we ran with some industry friends of ours. We're going to break down our teams. There's plenty more to get to on that as well. We also dipped our toes into some best ball discussion. I just did my first post-draft best ball over on Underdog, so we're going to get into the results there. Some interesting little takeaways there. And then a couple of polarizing or underrated players that we'll dive into a little bit later on in the show. Let's get it rolling. Welcome back in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, again brought to you by our friends over at Dynasty owner John McKechnie, Mario Puig, hanging out with you on this Wednesday. We're a couple weeks now past the draft, so now we're starting to look ahead to draft season. We've got best ball season now kind of fully underway in some sense. For sickos like us, absolutely, it has begun. And of course, you know, we're starting to see in your Dynasty leagues, rookie drafts are coming out, all that good stuff. But for the RotoWire Fantasy Football Magazine, which will be on newsstands this summer, I believe, we went ahead, and I think this is the first Dynasty mock that's ever been in the RotoWire Magazine. So Dynasty getting a little bit more shine, a little bit more mainstream now. So we went ahead, Alan Sislowski, our man, went ahead and organized it. A bunch of guys from the industry joined in for it, along with yourself. And I, so Mario, why don't you just kind of give us a little breakdown on how this went for you? You were picking first overall, I believe, or is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if that was a randomized draft order or if that was Alan doing some, you know, ref home cooking kind of thing there, but yeah, I had the first pick. So I kind of went with more of a win now kind of roster, perhaps, just because when I have the first pick in a dynasty startup at the moment, I would feel compelled to take Jonathan Taylor there. And especially when it's a running back that you're taking at that first pick, like you got to start competing right away. Cause I'm obviously like this pro running back kind of like pro bono lobbyist or whatever, but I would also acknowledge that they of course play the most violent position among the skill position players. And so they necessarily do have shorter lifespans as prospects, as viable fantasy assets. So taking Jonathan Taylor, I was like, I got to do a minimum 8 peat with him on the roster. And so I didn't really care so much about taking long-term lottery tickets, especially because incidentally, as it turned out, I thought people were taking rookies way too high. So I didn't take a single one, I don't think. And I definitely imagined myself competing now, yes, but I thought there were so many good veterans pushed down the board. I thought I was even getting good 3-4 year window guys who are going to be starters for me, while other people were taking rookies who might give them that same window, but also could just not be good at all. So yeah, I went with all veterans, even though I'm supposed to be like, you know, one of the rookie people in the prospect people in this draft.
Right, exactly. So I think that's pretty telling. And you know, like you said, You come back around on the second turn, you get Patrick Mahomes and Austin Eckler. So that just kind of like locks you into that win now type of mentality. And you went ahead DeAndre Hopkins a little bit later. So obviously
another win now, because and specifically, like, I'm getting a little greedy there, where I'm like, if I can just get through those first 6 weeks, then I've got the juggernaut fully assembled. But I do think in that case, it would be a juggernaut.
Yeah, no, I absolutely do too. That would be a pretty electric start there. Your thoughts on you know, maybe some of these rookies that went early? I think, let's see here.
The first one was Drake London, right?
Drake London
by Dalton Deldon.
To Dalton in the second pick or first pick of the second round, and then you got to go back a little bit further to find some. Or Breece Hall also went in the first round. My mistake there.
Oh, that was my bad.
And then Garrett Wilson went in the second round as well. Treylon Burks went in the second round. Kenneth Walker also went in the second round. So, again, ahead of guys like Patrick Mahomes, Austin Eckler, Tyreek Hill, Josh Allen, Cam Akers, Devontae Smith even. So interesting, you know, kind of enthusiasm for some of these rookies that, like you said, you know, could have that star potential, but also we don't fully know yet.
Yeah, I like the Breece Hall pick by Alex Dunlap at the, what is that, like seventh, something like that. Like, totally fine with that pick, totally fine with Dalton taking Drake London. I'm a big London fan. I'm still a bit of a truther for Arthur Smith. So wrongly or not, I'm still optimistic. I'm very optimistic for that whole thing. So those two rookie picks I like a lot. Pretty much the rest of them I don't really like. John, yours of Ty Chandler in the second to last round, that's harmless. I definitely think that's a good one, but saw some guys that just, you know, might be out of the league pretty soon, let alone the question of them sticking in the league and being good. And I'm specifically thinking about guys like Brian Robinson and the LSU running back. Those guys went pretty high over a number of veteran proven players, including proven running backs. So that kind of stuff, I don't know what the thinking is there. I can't follow it. It's not that I can imagine a reason that I just disagree with. It's like, I can't think of the reason in the first place. Garrett Wilson too, I think, was a reach, just because, I mean, he's a very good prospect, of course. And in a rookie dynasty draft, you know, take him wherever you want, really, as high as you want, really. But in this draft, he went ahead of, you know, Tyreek Hill, Chris Godwin, Devontae Smith, a bunch of guys, Hopkins and Gabriel Davis. Davis, I'm very high on. I think he should have gone much earlier than where I took him. So, oh, and Mike Evans way down in like the fifth round, going like four, what is that, like 40 picks later than Garrett Wilson. I don't think you want to be in that team spot, because if you're making that pick, you are not competing for at least a couple of years. And the team that takes Evans isn't exactly taking him at a price where they're losing prospect capital necessarily. Like, Evans in the, what is this? This is Cody Carpentier's fifth round pick. So in the fifth round there, it's like, he's going to get Evans, maybe a top 12 type receiver, especially if Godwin starts slow this year. And Evans is only, what, like 28, 29? So that team could get 3 or 4 years of top 15 wide receiver returns from Mike Evans, while Garrett Wilson is just hoping that the Jets cut Zach Wilson and finally draft a good quarterback in 2 years, you know?
Right. So, I mean, I wrote up the rookies article for the RotoWire magazine, and, you know, Wilson was such a tricky blurb to tackle, because you got like 100 words to kind of sum it up. For this year with these guys. And it's like, I think that the star potential for Wilson is pretty obvious, but I think it's just kind of presumptuous to say that he hits the ground running so well, when not only you have guys like Elijah Moore and Corey Davis, who are not scrubs by any mean, and it means, and, you know, Elijah Moore might turn into something really, really good. Not totally sure what Corey Davis will continue to be necessarily.
1 year at most. Yeah, they're definitely done with him after this year. So we'll see if they get some other big guy or whatever.
And then, you know, that on top of the fact that, you know, Zach Wilson could be just kind of an anchor if he doesn't take that step forward. So you look at that and it's like, well, you have 2 years of 2-3 years of frustrating quarterback play for Wilson, and like, I don't care how good you are, like that's going to, you know, be a drag on your fantasy value relative to maybe some of the other guys.
Yeah. And I guess I should say that too, this is a mock draft, and of course in mock drafts people can do things more as like thought experiments or just to kind of be devil's advocate or whatever, because there's no stakes. It's just you know, it's all hypothetical or whatever, so that can kind of explain some of these picks, I guess. But man, something like taking let's see what this is a, it's like Damian Pierce went ahead of Chase Edmonds and Damian Harris, you know? It's like that's probably the snap leader at running back for the Dolphins and Edmonds. And then Harris is probably we got to consider him the heavy favorite to lead the Patriots backfield in production this year. And then he's a free agent after this year. And, you know, if this guy's leading the New England backfield in production and then hits free agency, do we think he's going to go be a backup somewhere else? I don't really expect that. I think he must have gotten hurt if that happens. So there's just cases of like that where rookies who don't even really have actually as much upside as might be imagined, you know, there's upside with these some of these prospects, but some of the guys go up the board almost, it just seems like, because they're new, fresh names that we don't already associate, you know, bitterness with, even though we will in like 2 months.
Yeah. So that'll come. The bloom will come off the rose, maybe not too long from now with some of these guys. Julia, a regular viewer for our show over on YouTube, wants to know what are the weaknesses when it comes to Brian Robinson. Robinson is someone who went in the seventh round of this draft. Yes. So he went in the seventh, I believe it was, yeah, like mid seventh. So
yeah, he went a pick before Hunter Renfrow and two before Kareem Hunt. That's Kareem Hunt is going to be a free agent after this year. And in the meantime, he's going to play 30 snaps a game for the Browns. Like, you can't take Robinson ahead of Kareem Hunt. Tony Pollard is going to be a free agent soon. He was three picks later, and in the meantime is the no doubt handcuff to Ezekiel Elliott. So I just mean cases like that. It's too early. Although in Robinson's case, I'll go ahead and say it. He's never going to start in the NFL unless players ahead of him get hurt. And once those players are not hurt, he will go to the bench forever. And I don't even think he's going to be in the NFL in 4 years. The reason I say that is, he played for 4 years for Alabama and did basically nothing. He was, he played a role for 4 years like most walk-on running backs do for a team. Like, you just play in garbage time. You'd get, you know, goal line carries when they're up 35 points against Vanderbilt or whatever. And that was his role for 4 years before starting in 2021 when, yeah, he took on the starting role for Alabama, but A, he averaged less than 5 yards per carry. And B, that was a fifth season that he only got because COVID afforded an extra year of eligibility to him. So if we try to imagine where Robinson would have gone in the 2021 draft as a player who had a career high of what, like 290 yards in a season, playing as the Alabama third and fourth running back the entire time, he would not get drafted. It's not a question. He would not get drafted. He wouldn't go in 12 round draft, let alone a 7 round one, let alone in the first 3 rounds of one. So that's a problem for me. And it's also the 5 yards per carry detail. Like, I actually, because I'm insane, looked this up. The last time that happened for an Alabama starting running back was this guy named Terry Grant, like 15 years ago. I was defaming Glenn Coffey. You know, I was like, he's the worst Alabama back since Glenn Coffey. He's like, no, Glenn Coffey was way better than Brian Robinson. much better player.
I love the dedication to really drill down to the, you know, absolute center of the earth to find that one.
Hey, man, the only other thing I'll say is, if it didn't work for TJ Yeldon, it sure as hell isn't going to work for Brian Robinson.
And, you know, I also think, you know, not for nothing, but I don't think that Robinson even takes on the role that he did this past season if Alabama has better options, in the sense that, like,
well, if they Jerome just had, Ford didn't transfer, he would have started over Robinson.
So there's that. I think that, you know, Trey Sanders, he's had some knee issues, so like he's just not what he could have been, unfortunately. But like Jace McClellan and Roydell Williams, like, I think that both of those guys, if they were both healthy, like, they were, I think, class of 2020, you know, borderline.
Is Roydell Williams starters. The son of that Tulane receiver from like 20 years ago? It's funny.
Could be.
I didn't expect to see that name again. He's in the South, anyway, but yeah, so Robinson had chances to play in those first 4 years, you know? Like, he could have gotten more onto the field. Better running backs for Alabama did. Then I guess part of it too is probably people are fused over the combine 40 times this year. And I'm sorry, they're all wrong. Every single one is faster than what it actually was. The one with the least discrepancy from his real time in the so-called official times is Pierre Strong, who was given a 4.37 after actually running a 4.39. In a case like Brian Robinson, it was initially reported as a 4.62, I believe. And then when they did the adjusted versions where everyone inexplicably was given up to a tenth of a second cut from their time, which has never happened before. Every other time it's always been the opposite. Every single combine, every single instance, you go from unofficial times to official times, the times get less generous. They get slower. This time they're saying they're a tenth faster in each case. No way. Especially not Robinson. He doesn't run a 4.52. He's Alfred Blue. He's too tall. He's not heavy enough for how tall he is. He's not fast enough for how too big of a target he is, being at the anchor deficit that he is at his height. He's just not going to play. And Jared Patterson will run ahead of him this year.
There it is. All right. So that's a good, I'm sure we'll unfortunately have to circle back on Brian Robinson, because I feel like.
Well, when Gibson breaks his toe again or whatever, yeah, then he'll play.
Yeah, we'll have another troll feeding at that point. But for now, that this is a take the kind of bat, the draft capital absolutism. Before that, really became a thing, I feel like a lot of narrative would always be this team drafts like crap all the time. So why would you put stock in a team that drafts like crap?
Well, even if you want to do that,
they took him in the third round. It's
they took Gibson in the earlier third round already. He's mm-hmm. a later pick than Antonio Gibson, and he's just there's no indication he'll be an NFL viable running back. Other than that, a team that always makes bad decisions probably made another one here. That's about as weak of a case as I can imagine.
Yeah, so that completely agree with that one. Julia adds on this will probably be. This is a really good question, so I think we'll have to maybe make a note of this for next week's show as we get a couple more best ball drafts in. But your top three rankings differentials for between best ball and redraft for this year. So keep that in mind for next week, Mario. We're doing some live prep on this week's show, but that there is always kind of a difference in the way you approach a redraft league versus a best ball. What are kind of without mentioning maybe some specific names, unless you have some, what are those differentials in your mind with your approach?
Yeah, unfortunately, the only names that will easily come to mind to me right now aren't that useful because they're just probably going to suck either way. But a player like Marcus Mariota at this point, I don't know if I could really take him in best ball unless I'm doing a wide field tournament thing where I'm submitting a ton of entries Marcus Mariota, in any case, would be very interesting to me as a fantasy quarterback if I thought he had job security. After that Ritter pick, I don't really have much faith in his job security. And even if his backup had been Felipe Franks instead, you still would have to worry about Marcus Mariota staying healthy. So with Ritter there, there's a pretty high chance Mariota is kind of just, I won't say he's like a goose egg all year, but he might be a goose egg for the final, 12 weeks or something. And in best ball, I don't think you can really afford that. In best ball, you can't be getting zeros right off the bat. You're going to have enough guys getting hurt as it is. You're going to need luck to make it to the finish line. You can't set yourself back by taking on cases of players like Mariota who could just end up not playing really, beyond September or whatever, if that. But in redraft, I would be very interested in Mariota as a last round pick or something like that, because you can just cut him in redraft if he turns out to be the zero that you're worried about. But in best ball, you're just stuck with him in that case. So just in the meantime, before we hopefully can think about that more and put together a more helpful list, I would just be more leery of ending up with total duds in best ball since you can't change your roster. And in a tournament setting, there's, of course, upside to consider in a player, even if they end up a zero 9 times out of 10, if they give you a 1 time out of 10 where they're a huge value in a tournament setting, it still makes sense to go with it. But in the meantime, I would rather take quarterbacks who I'm just totally sure will start barring injury.
Yeah, that's a good approach there. Yeah, but because you can't have that in season management for best ball, of course. So yeah, when you're kind of threading a thin needle as it is, as far as what kind of injury luck you may or may not run into, then yeah, absolutely. I think you lay that out pretty well there. Let's see. One last chirp from Julia. I thought Derrick Henry had 5 yards of carry at Alabama.
He was way over that. He was way over that and on a really monstrous volume of like 30 carries a game.
He won the freaking Heisman Trophy.
Yeah. Like it's, if I had to pick a running back from Alabama in the after Terry Grant,
Saban era.
Yeah. I mean, Kenyon Drake is the worst one, I would say. I think Drake's even worse than Yeldon, as bad as it turned out for Yeldon. But those two, you know, it's like they were both, especially Yeldon, he was a star at Alabama. I guess Drake was just kind of a backup to Henry most of the time and Lacey before that. But Yeldon was a star there. Robinson is kind of a similar player. He's like 6'2", to whatever it is, and not heavy enough for how lanky and tall he is. Just a worse version of Yeldon, which basically makes him Alfred Blue, I think.
I'll always like to picture an alternate universe in which Bo Scarborough was actually.
Oh, right. Bo. Yeah. Bo Scarborough, definitely better than Robinson also. Maybe not as durable.
Yes. Unfortunately. Yeah. The durability was kind of the downfall there. Scott wants to know biggest, riser and faller after the NFL draft. So, you know, for me, the fallers would have to be, at least if you're looking at these guys for redraft, would have to be Treylon Burks and Garrett Wilson. You know, Treylon Burks and Jameson Williams.
As a faller?
My view on them is worse than it was going into the draft. It couldn't have been worse for Williams, and I think Burks is going to get overexposed.
Is that because Burks was less convincing as a prospect than you thought before the draft, or because you're specifically concerned about the Titans?
It's a combo of both. I think that the going to Ryan Tannehill and like just penciling him in to have the AJ Brown type of role, where AJ Brown, when he played last year, like a 27% average target share per game, like he can't handle that. I don't think. And I think he's going to have a rough learning curve. And I think it could go, I'm not saying that he's Laquan Treadwelling, but like, I'm worried.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I'm a little concerned for Burks, if only because, yeah, they are putting so much on him right away that you could easily forgive him if he were a little bit shaken by these expectations. I don't know if he really expected to be AJ Brown his rookie year. So maybe he's reeling from that. I don't know. But I'm intrigued by Burks' upside there. I mean, it may be a lot more risky than a player like Drake London, I would say. London, I should mention, I think he's awesome. When they took him eighth, I was just like, I went from being a sort of truther of London's to just feeling like, I don't know, not saying like the mainstream now agrees with me about how good he is, but like before the draft, I was worried like, oh yeah, he might fall to like 22nd or something. So if people think he's running a 4.65 or something like that. So when he went eighth, that kind of removed all hesitation for me related to London. Like, I don't even care about the quarterback situation there. I'm totally in on London. So the draft changed that for me. Sure. But in Burks's case, I actually still think he has the most upside, just because some of those routes are rather simple, you know, just kind of like 10 yard, 12 yard in breaking routes, post routes off of the play action. And while I'm a little concerned about Burks's ability to pick up the offense, I guess, and like run routes the right way and just get Vrabel's trust, I suppose, I really think he can't screw that up if it is that simple, you know, like three routes. I feel like he can get it. But it's concerning to me because I just don't like what the Titans are doing generally. I think they're doing a lot of strange decisions. So it's my concern with Burks is almost like I'm worried that the Titans liked him in the first place. You know, I think they're making a lot of bad decisions right now.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good like added angle on.
But the biggest riser or the biggest falls, I think, are just pretty much the quarterbacks. And the biggest riser probably has to be Sky Moore, right?
Yeah, I mean, or is this your opinion or just like what you've seen?
Well,
I was going off of my own personal opinion.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say when we did that rookie draft way back in like February or whatever, I think I got Sky Moore in the third round of that. And now he goes in the first rounds of rookie drafts. And I think even as high as something like the seventh round in like redraft in best ball. Maybe I'm misquoting that. But a lot of people, because a lot of people believe that Juju Smith-Schuster is not good. Most people believe Mecole Hardman is not good. They're so deluded on Hardman that they've convinced themselves Valdez Scantling is better. So if you necessarily believe that those three are bad enough to fall into one group together, then you at that point have to believe Patrick Mahomes is going to have a good year, or that Sky Moore necessarily picks up all of that slack, which he won't. That slack isn't there either. But
save this discussion for the end of the show.
I know.
We got a whole segment on this. But yeah, what we will get there. Didn't mean to fully gut job. I was kidding.
No, it's a good thing you did.
We gotta touch on a couple more dynasty things here, and then we'll switch over to best ball.
Yes.
So beyond that, rounding out the rest of your team. So you went Taylor, Mahomes, Eckler, Hopkins through the first four, Gabriel Davis, Juju, Christian Kirk, love that pick. Alan Lazard, Albert O in the ninth. I thought about taking him, I think, like two rounds earlier, but
people
I had
scared
already
about dual shits. You can't. How do you say it? He's cool or whatever, but he's 17 pounds lighter than Albert O and 0.2 seconds slower in the 40. Albert O Quaguenum is gonna rake. He's a monster.
I guess like the one thing that I did notice when I was going into the research on Dulcich a little bit was that, you know, and I don't know if this was necessitated by just the lack of receiver depth that the Packers had last year, but that they ran a lot of two tight end personnel. So I think that Dulcich like could have a path to getting on the field. But the problem is, unlike the Packers, where you had Davante Adams and then it was just kind of like up for grabs elsewhere, like the Broncos have a loaded receiving core, in my opinion, you know, between like, you know, Sutton and Judy and Tim Patrick. And then you have Albert O, like the target pecking order. Yeah. So like all of that, I think is the bigger problem than necessarily the offense. We'll have to see if Hackett brings it like that two tight end, like the usage the same way that he did in Green Bay. But if he does, then I could see Dulcich being on the field. But then, you know, you can also apply the old axioms about, you know, rookie tight ends struggling. And, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he did.
Yeah, I like him. And I thought he was a fine pick by the Broncos. I even understand what Hackett meant when Hackett was saying, like, we don't have anybody like him. Let's go get him. It's like, yeah, it's good to have as many different types of qualified football players as possible. And Dulcich could very well be that. It's just that, like he said, they're going to run plenty of two tight end looks. So for a head coaching perspective, having a player like Dulcich and spending a third rounder on him, even if he's only projecting for like 350 snaps, that's something a head coach has an easy time justifying. They don't think in terms of like GM brain, where like, oh, we have to get this much projected APR for a second contract to be worth this pick slot. No, they're just like, give me guys, give me guys who, you know, got that dog in them.
Who and could be dudes.
Yeah. So Dulcich is like a good player. It's going to be hard for any coach and Hackett included to look at him and say like, oh no, I don't want that. They just see like a good player and they don't need to believe that the players they already have are bad to justify wanting to add them to their team. You know? So I've seen a lot of people specifically say, well, Hackett, they're spending a third round pick on Dulcich and Albert Okwuegbunam was only a fourth rounder. The new regime is staking themselves to Dulcich. And there's a couple ways you can think through why this is not likely. One is that Albert Okwuegbunam would not fall to the fourth round again if he were in the draft again. If you can't get past that one step when you're running the whole draft capital scenario thing in your head, if you can't convince yourself that the player you're assigning the capital to would actually go in that round again today, then it no longer applies. So at worst, this is more like two third rounders competing against each other. And yes, the new regime picked one, but not the other, but they've been with neither of them. Hackett has not coached Dulcich. They're both starting from scratch. So when starting from scratch, I'd rather have the guy who is 17 pounds heavier and 0.2 faster in the 40.
And yeah, so there's no doubt that Albert O is that top tight end in Denver. That's going to be a fun offense. We've been waiting for years for them to like figure out a quarterback post Peyton Manning. They've had really good receiver talent and tight end talent for years now, and just haven't been able to tap into it. Finally, we think we'll be able to see that now that Russ is there. Late round picks, you had Kenny Golladay, that is.
Maybe that was a bad one. I was like, he'll play. Who cares? I gotta get someone for bye weeks or whatever. Allen took my guy, Paris Campbell. Otherwise, I probably would have took Campbell there or something.
Well, you know, as Primus once said, they can't all be zingers. Then you got Van Jefferson, David Njoku, James Robinson.
Love Njoku, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think he's going to rake, like, this year and after
that.
It's
finally happening?
Yeah, it is, I think. Well, don't get me wrong. I'd rather have someone other than Stefanski running the show, because I don't like what Stefanski has done with those tight ends. But I think in Njoku's case, they're so invested at this point, and with Hooper out of the picture, I think Stefanski will kind of just not – like, he won't be able to miss the epiphany this time. Like, he's just going to – sometime in practice, because he had to put Njoku out there for the whole time, he's just going to notice, like, wow, that guy can jump really high. Should have thought about doing something with that before. Maybe I will now.
This is news to me. And then for the brand at the end, Mecole Hardman in the 14th.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I got that. I got the wide receiver one and the wide receiver two for the Chiefs. Losers.
Yeah. let's get on over. We'll run through my team real quick. I picked out of the 10th spot. Got Cooper Kupp, Jaylen Waddle. And then this is where the running back deflation really worked in my favor. To be able to walk away with Alvin Kamara and Nick Chubb as my third and fourth picks was just awesome. I was really pumped about that. Really excited. I think that both of those guys are definitely still in their prime, so that they helped me in that win now window. Lamar Jackson in the 5th. You know, I think a healthy year from him. I know that there isn't a ton of help around him, and the offense can be clunky at times, but Lamar is still a stud.
Before his injury
last year, he was starting to do things that we hadn't seen from him before, you know, leading the team on these double digit comebacks, you know, being asked to do more as a passer and succeeding with those added expectations. So in on him, not worried about the injury from last year also, so that no worries there. Darren Waller, couple reaches here from me, admittedly. I would guess Wandale Robinson in the 7th.
Gus, you think Edwards Waller in the 6th is a reach?
No, that Waller.
Waller. Okay, I like that Waller pick a lot.
Yeah, that I think, especially with, you know, the way that I had constructed it, where I had two receivers, two running backs, and my quarterback already figured out. I figured drilling in to the tight end market what made some sense. Went with Wandale Robinson and Gus Edwards following there. I probably could have gotten Edwards like 3 rounds later. So
yeah, Edwards might have been a bit of a reach. I don't know if Robinson is, though. Like, I've been kind of going on a very violent back and forth, swinging up and down between, you know, panicking about him and getting way too high on him. The panic we talked about the last podcast, probably him being 5'8". Mm-hmm. It's basically just Tyreek in terms of good case outcomes as far as that goes. But then I start becoming a bit of a truther about it and start convincing myself, like, no, this will work, though, because he's different than the other 5'8 guys. But he is. That's the thing. He is different than those other 5'8 guys who failed. And a guy like Jalen Darden, for all we know, could break out in like his third or fourth year, thus providing a second or hopefully third case study in addition to Robinson's instance of a good fantasy receiver who's 5'8". But it is a little hard to take that leap, I guess, when Tyreek was such an outlier himself, you know, and whatever Robinson has going for him, it isn't 4.2 speed. So it's gonna have to work differently than it did with Hill. I just am kind of optimistic, just because Robinson's production was just awesome, like so good, both at Kentucky and Nebraska when he was like a true freshman. So he was just red hot for two different programs and played way above his team baselines in both cases. If the Giants are really committed to him, I think it's going to work, even if it's kind of like a first time deal.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I mean, he was a big time recruit, delivered on it, you know, right away, goes to Kentucky to play receiver and just, you know, carried that entire offense like that. I don't know how much the Will Levis hype has poisoned your timeline like it has mine, but
I'm trying to avoid all 2023 class.
Yeah, as you should. But Will Levis exists basically because of Wandale Robinson. Like he carried that entire.
Is he offense. The one who's like 190 pounds, Levis?
Oh no, he's a chunky boy. He's like 230.
Who am I thinking of? Let me think of
Bryce Young.
Oh, yeah, him. I was actually thinking of another one yet who's also – but, yeah, Young is basically like Chucky Keaton kind of frame, which won't work. He's got to get a little bigger.
I don't think it's going to work either.
In any case, yeah, I mean, Robinson, especially given how good he was at Nebraska too, you know, it's like this – it's really hard to bet that the third time is going to go poorly for a guy who just aced everything the first two times.
That's what I'm saying, man. So I thought that was a worthwhile gamble. So I wanted to get a little bit risky, but still good with that. I was, despite the reach on Gus Edwards, getting Rondale Moore in the ninth round, that felt good. I like KJ Osborne.
Oh, that was honestly. You. Nice. Yeah, I'm surprised he lasted that long. And by the way, Rondale could be, in addition to Darden and Tyreek and Wandale, he could be the fourth good case outcome of that. 5'8" or less, and I'm probably lower on Moore than most people were. I can't tell how high people are on Moore at this point. I was lower on him than most people last year. I think maybe it's starting to be more the other way. Like people are kind of moving on from him too quickly.
Yeah, I mean it's just been one season. Like you know, give him some time. I think that he's talented. He's a crazy athlete. So I like him. KJ Osborne in the 10th. I think that. I don't know if he has long-term star potential, but I like his potential role for this year. And I thought he outdid my expectations a year ago. Nico Collins, I think if Davis Mills turns into anything, so I would like that.
That's who I should have took instead of Galladay. Like Galladay is just the expired version of Collins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good comp. But Mo Alie-Cox, I figured you'd dig that one.
Yeah,
in the 12th.
I would have took Njoku, though. I would have. I'm a Mo Alie-Cox truther. I can't trust Chris Ballard is the problem.
Fair. Definitely fair. And then rounding it out, I don't know if people were expecting this guy to even be drafted in this particular format, even though it's 12 teams and 14 rounds. But I went with Ty Chandler in the 13th and then rounded it out with Devin Duvernay. So I think – you know, we talked a little bit offline yesterday about Chandler, really productive guy at both Tennessee and North Carolina, tested really well at the combine. And you look at the Vikings roster, like obviously Dalvin Cook is the guy and he's going to be the guy for at least a couple more years. Alexander Mattison, I think, is going into the
last. We'll see on that. I mean, Cook's got are both of his shoulders busted. The one's been separated like three times, which means he's probably not far from like a replacement.
Yeah. Remember that Steelers Thursday night game this year where it's like, there's no way he plays. And then there's like all this like panic to pick up Kenny Nwangwu and stuff. And then Cook plays and runs for like 200 yards.
Just jammed him full of like elephant painkillers and put him out there and he just murdered them.
Yeah, he was nuts. So, but I think Chandler at least has like that talent. Like if we were doing the NFL draft again, like I would take Chandler over Ty Davis Price, like 1,000 times out of 1,000. So
I wasn't even a big fan of Chandler. I kind of was just like no opinion really. Cause I thought he was fine. Like I didn't have a negative opinion. He's clearly better than the LSU running back.
So, you know, just looking ahead on that one. And then Devin Duvernay, who I think, you know, is kind of an undervalued. I mean, if you're ranking receiving cores right now, the Ravens are obviously like near the bottom, but they still
need to count Mark Andrews. They weren't taking all those tight ends just to play field goal blocking.
So that's a good point too. But I like Duvernay. So I thought 14th round.
I like Duvernay.
Yeah, man. So we'll get to him later. Hopefully, before we get on over to our next segment, talking about the best ball draft from this morning, I've got a message from our friends. Over at Blue Wire.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
And we got a message from our friends over at Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you ready for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual NFL franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You will have complete control over your team. You can build through the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Can you create a dynasty of champions? Sign up now at dynastyowner.com and start building your dynasty today. All right, let's get on over to the best ball draft. I think after doing like a million best ball drafts last year and never once, and I guess thankfully in hindsight, getting the first overall pick, I got it this time. And what did I do? Jonathan Taylor, of course. But things get a little bit sketch after that. So many receivers come flying off the board. Unsurprisingly, Cooper Kupp goes second. Justin Jefferson goes fourth. Jamar Chase, Devontae Adams, also first rounders. Stephon Diggs, Tyreek Hill, Debo Samuel, CeeDee Lamb, and Mike Evans all go off the board before my second pick. So I'm just kind of pinched a little bit as far as receivers go. And I went ahead and I took AJ Brown. So that's a bet on talent. I don't know if the Eagles thing is going to work out. I don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to work out, but having AJ Brown there gives it a shot of working out, of course, and then some. And it's not like AJ Brown was a function of good quarterback play in Tennessee, really. Like he, if anything, was the one that was dragging that along.
Right. And I guess for what it's worth, I was definitely skeptical of Jalen Hurts going into last year. I don't think I was wrong to be skeptical of him. I think he really is limited as a passer, and I don't really think there's much to be done about it. I thought in most games his numbers looked better than they actually were. Like, I thought there were a lot of points where it was just so ugly with Hurts that I like could barely keep watching.
There is a lot of garbage time production.
Absolutely. Yeah, especially as a runner, and though he had some good stretches as a passer, by the end of the year, it became clear every time you take that sample over 30 pass attempts, you're begging for him to fall apart. And I think that's still the case, but I don't want to just say it'll definitely work or anything, but I'm not exactly worried about Hurts with receivers like these. As long as he's got AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert on the field, I don't know. The defense still has to cover the run threat that he poses. That's not something they can't just like come out there and call a pass defense or like switch to a pass heavy look when they want to after the fact. Like they have to go in prepared to defend everything each play before the snap. So before the snap, you don't know what's going on. Even a little bit after the snap, you don't know if Hurts is going to run it. You're always going to have to keep some resources toward keeping that run threat contained. And to do it, you have to take away from your pass defense resources. So I might be concerned about Hurts' ability as a passer in general, but in that particular scenario with receivers particularly as good as these, I don't know. I'm not sure he can screw it up. I'm not sure a quarterback worse than him could screw it up. So I think he'll be fine. It is a different question, though, when you're wondering, can AJ Brown and Devontae Smith eat as much as they and their fantasy investors want them to? And I don't know. I guess the pie, it won't be that big with a quarterback like Jalen Hurts, but it also might only be those three guys. Like,
and I got both Brown and Smith.
Sorry, what?
I ended up doubling back. So despite
that makes sense though.
I saw how my team was unfolding and I was like, you know what? Like, I think at this point I gotta dive in with both feet. So in the event that this Eagles offense just goes nuts, I have basically 60% of their, receiving production right there between yeah. Brown and Smith.
Yeah, and John, the thing too is you didn't take Brown or Smith at problematic prices. Like you got them, if anything, a little late. Like with some of those receivers that you mentioned going ahead of your second pick, I think you're borderline lucky Brown was there in the first place. Like I think him and T. Higgins would have both been worthwhile picks there. And maybe if you do like another draft and you get that exact same scenario, I would try to like diversify on that sort of basis. But particularly in best ball and particularly in tournaments, getting those two Eagles receivers actually makes sense. And I guess this kind of goes back to that question from earlier about best ball. And you might be able to say that Brown and Smith are preferable in best ball just because they are so explosive. They could have monstrous games, especially Brown. But you don't really know for sure going into each game how likely it is. Well, I guess you're starting them both either way, so maybe it doesn't matter. But in best ball, you're more able to capitalize on the stack, I guess. You can't have both Brown and Smith on a redraft team, in my opinion, or at least it'd be a weird ordeal. Maybe it could work. But in best ball, it definitely can, because you're getting basically that wide receiver one spot accounted for the vast majority of weeks and paying only what the third and a sixth to do it. So that's how I see it anyway. And I guess for what it's worth, I am very high on both Brown and Smith as talents.
There we go. All right. So feeling better already. I dig it.
Well, John, also Olave. Yeah. I didn't even notice that pick before. That's who your real ringer is.
I love my Olave pick. So I went ahead and got him. I really do like my receiving core overall.
Olave is your wide receiver five with St. Brown as your third and Devontae as your fourth, I think is more than good enough, especially when you have Taylor and Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. And I did have to walk the walk a little bit because I have been a believer in Amon-Ra St. Brown's projection for this year. I just think that he suits what Jared Goff does and what that offense does. So, I think it'd be better if this was a full point PPR type of format, but even in half point, like it is on underdog, like
nothing wrong with 90 catches awesome. In half point PPR.
No. So I will take that all day. Got a couple comments here from Julia, just a couple quick hitters. So don't have to spend too much time here, but Burks or London fantasy points per game. So just which one do you prefer this year?
I do think Burks has more upside, but I still take London practically because I think he has plenty of upside himself and a higher floor by quite a bit.
Waller or Hockenson?
I'll say Waller. I am maybe a bit of a Waller truther, though. I think he's just awesome, whereas Hockenson to me is merely good. And also, I've got plenty of respect for St. Brown and DeAndre Swift, so I'm a little bit worried about Hockenson's competition, I guess.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm starting to wonder if Hockenson really ever becomes even
close. I mean, he'll be real good, you know, but it's like Waller is such a high standard to reach.
Yeah, he's crazy, but, you know, I start to, you know, the Davante Adams addition along with Hunter Renfro seemingly being like really ingratiated with that offense now.
Yeah.
I don't know if Waller can like a repeat of 2019 or whatever his best season was.
Well,
but
the thing is, Waller was basically clearing that space for Renfro, you know? So defenses, I think, will adjust a little bit more to Renfro. Like, I think he put up those numbers without them really caring enough to try to stop him, and B, Davante Adams being there might just make Waller impossible to defend because they're going to probably try to triple Davante, which that was never the case when Waller was there before. Obviously, he was always getting the double and triple teams.
Yeah, because, you know, they had some semblance of or some combination of promising but not at the moment particularly threatening receivers on the outside. So defenses could definitely, you know, cheat to a you know, slow Waller down as best as they could. And then last one real quick, J.K. Dobbins or Gus starting week one. It's got to be Dobbins. I mean,
yeah, Dobbins. I like Edwards, but Dobbins is one of the best.
Yeah. So, you know, health being equal for both of them, both their knee injuries happened, you know, within a very, you know, short time frame of each other's. Dobbins, the younger guy, not by like a ton, but I think Dobbins.
Dobbins is just a star waiting to happen. I mean, he's a uncommonly good running back prospect.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I thought that he was a stud from the jump at Ohio State. There's really not much that's changed my mind on that one. And Debo Samuel went early second round in at best ball. So he went after Stephon Diggs and Tyreek Hill with the fourth pick in that second round. Going back to the best ball draft. So yeah, we rounded out that receiving core. And I also got Kyle Pitts in the third. So obviously I'm paying the max price for Pitts. I certainly could going back. I certainly could have gone
Higgins wrong with
there,
but Pitts is so good. We don't even have like a frame of reference for the kind of monster he is.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's going to be like that entire, like him and London are just going to get pretty much all the work.
They're good, man. They're good. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to get myself too high on Mariota thinking about it.
I got Justin Herbert in the fifth. I didn't end up with any of his pass catchers, so that's bad process. But again, knocking off the rust.
In half point PPR, and I don't even say so. I wouldn't even say so in half point PPR. I mean, Keenan Allen is the best receiver, and he's, you know, you're basically getting Amon-Ra St. Brown, what, like three rounds later for the same numbers as Keenan Allen. You know, like that's better than stacking with Allen at a higher cost.
That's a good little spin zone there. Probably a reach here, but I was getting real scared about my running back room at post Jonathan. Still didn't have one.
Can't tell if it's your connection or mine, John. Guess I better talk just in case John's gone. I'll talk about the running backs that John was picking. He took Damian Pierce in the eighth round, Ramondre Stevenson in the 10th, Chase Edmonds in the 11th. Why the hell is he going third out of those? Khalil Herbert and Tyler Algier also rounding out John's running back roster. So,
got my back. Can you see me?
Oh, can you hear me now?
I can.
I was just putting you on blast for your stupid running back picks.
Good.
But not really. Well, I do think it's odd that Chase Edmonds fell that far, but I think it's an awesome pick that you got him there. Even if I would, I'd probably have to rank Edmonds way ahead of Damian Pierce, to be honest.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll take it. I got to take a closer look at Edmonds, especially in light of just the, I don't.
Granted, like, he is better in, he's better in full point PPR, I guess I should say.
Yeah, no, he is. But you know, it's an island of misfit mascots or whatever that down there in Miami when it comes to those running backs. So I don't know which one's going to emerge. The don't stare at the sun
for you and this team, definitely Edmonds.
Okay. All right. Well, that there it is. That's the final verdict there. Herbert and then Algier. Let's talk about Algier for a second, because you were on him like early in the draft process. You know, he's someone that ran for what, 36 touchdowns over the last two seasons at BYU.
Yeah. And on not many carries. It was only like 350, maybe something like that. He was basically scoring like every eight carries and breaking like a 40-yard run every 15 or so.
So he's 4'6" guy, but you know, like way over 220 pounds, had all these breakaway runs because he had all these forced missed tackles, all these long runs. You know, I don't see the Cordarrelle Patterson being I don't think that's what Atlanta, like in an ideal world, would want. Like I think that you can give Cordarrelle Patterson in this offense like 85 to 100 carries, and that works out pretty nicely, but I think you want to, for that like dirty between the tackles work, like give it to Algier. I know that Damien Williams is there too, but I just don't know what to make of him at this stage. So I thought that Algier, of the day three running backs, I think that he has the best chance of actually doing something this year.
Yeah. And I like Algier still, even though if he had run like a 4.55 instead of a 4.64, that would have made him more like a conventional top 100 pick to me, whereas at the 4.64 it was like, yeah, take him on day three, who cares, it's not a big deal, it could work out, and if it doesn't, who cares. As a prospect, he's basically trait wise anyway, he's kind of like Samaje Perine, I would say, and I have some enduring truther impulse for Perine, so I don't mean to insult Algier with that comparison. I also think Damien Williams is pretty good though, and I like Cordarrelle in an abbreviated role, you know, like you said, basically you don't want him running between the tackles, but 10 carries per game could still be there for Patterson. And I think they should really try to keep him going as a pass catcher, because he was just murdering them last year, murdering defenses, I should say, last year as a pass catcher. And I think he can keep doing that. But Algier, if for no other reason, is kind of interesting because he's aesthetically the closest match to Derrick Henry and the general power approach that Arthur Smith had with the Tennessee offense. And you can kind of see it taking shape, especially if you imagine Algier on the field. So when you have production like that in college as a runner, I'm going to be pretty interested, and I'm going to be more interested yet when you're 220 plus, even if you're not very fast. And if that particular player lands in an Arthur Smith situation, I'm more than intrigued. It's just kind of like, this might be one of those cases where we need the injury, but if it does happen, if Damien Williams, who I also like, actually, if Damien Williams gets hurt, then Alger's on the field. And I don't think Alger's losing his job because Williams gets healthy again after that.
The way that you were fleshing out that point, it was just like the Vince McMahon, meme where like he's at the table and like you say one thing and he's like, whoa, and then, you know, like, and he's getting on the field and he just falls out of his chair.
Yeah. I guess I basically do that. You don't even really need to point at the meme. I'm just doing it on my own.
Just your style. Let's see. Last handful of picks here. Noah Fant, Jameis Winston, Nico Collins.
Devin, like Winston, Duvernay. By the way, I love Winston. I just think people think he's like some bum and doesn't have any help. But I think I'm an Olave truther. So when that pick happened, I was like, no, it's on now.
Yes, dude. So, yeah, Winston for best ball, I think, is nice, because then you don't have to worry about starting him in redraft. But, like, if in the event that he has one of his wacky, like, 300-yard, three-touchdown games,
there it is. Winston and Herbert, I think, will definitely cut it, you know, health permitting.
Yes. So, I'm in on that. Rounding it out, again, I went with Devin Duvernay and Paris Campbell. Let's talk about two guys here. Mecole Hardman, a favorite topic of discussion on the pod, but let's start with Devin Duvernay before we sign off.
So, yeah, Duvernay is interesting to me because he's a densely built, very fast receiver who was super productive in college. And when you break down his traits going on a trait by trait basis, you don't really find a red flag. Like if there's one issue with Duvernay, I guess it would be, He doesn't run certain routes that well. Like he's not like a flexible receiver exactly. Like he kind of looks and runs bulky. So maybe there's certain like Deontay Johnson quick twitch things that he can't do, but he's known for very specifically having great hands. And we know that he's great after the catch because he's, you know, already whatever limitations he might have, he's already established as one of the NFL's more dangerous open field ball carriers for
all pro teams. Is a punt returner.
Right. So this is a fast guy with great hands who is very productive and is tough to tackle after the catch. I feel like this should be pretty easy. I think that kind of player is easy to get involved. My hang up is Greg Roman, because I think Greg Roman is just absolutely one of the worst offensive coordinators of distant memory. And I think it's in his nature to look at a guy like Duvernay and say, oh, you're good after the catch. You're good on little gadget plays. So we'll not use you on any other types of plays. We won't give you a chance to show how good you are, because I've got it all in my head that, oh, it's smart to use him this way, this one way, and then you use this other guy this other way. And it's like, no, just give Duvernay the ball, put him on the field, let that speed play, let those hands, let that yards after the catch ability play. That kind of player, I think, will just work themselves out if you just give them opportunities without obsessing so much about like the specific scenarios you're putting them in. And speed like that will play downfield. By the way, he's the fastest player aside from Lamar in that offense by far. Like, Bateman is slower than him, even though he's about 10 pounds lighter than Duvernay. So when particularly given the way Duvernay broke out as a slot receiver at Texas's senior year, I'm inclined to buy in if he's getting the snaps. I guess I don't know if he's going to get the snaps. They could still have James Prochet stealing snaps from him. I expect Mark Andrews to play more receiver than he has in previous years. And he already played plenty of receiver. I think Andrews basically playing receiver is why that Marquise Brown trade happened. So those are the things that I'm waiting to see how it shakes out. But if Duvernay gets the snaps, I don't know if you can stop a guy like that forever, even if you do, as an offensive coordinator, for some reason want to.
So, I mean, and just looking at like the broader context of the Ravens offense, like the Marquise Brown trade happens and they go ahead and eschew drafting a receiver the rest of the way. Like, I think that's a signal that they believe in one of Devin Duvernay, James Prochet, or Tylan Wallace. And based on the roles from last year, it would be Duvernay as kind of that next guy up opposite Bateman. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Bateman this year to perform, of course. And I think there were signs. It's an incomplete sample because he, you know, comes off the PUP list in week six. Lamar Jackson only plays like a handful of weeks after that. So he's getting like, you know, half of his sample is Tyler Huntley tainted. Not that I hate Tyler Huntley or anything, but I mean, he's not Lamar Jackson. But I like Bateman, but I think that there's room and there's value, especially in your fantasy drafts, when the potential number two receiver in what could be an explosive offense, number three target, because I mean, obviously Mark Andrews.
Oh, sorry. I was grimacing because I was worried I made noise into the feed. I wasn't grimacing at your comment.
No, not at all. I was just kind of getting it straightened out on the fly, but I don't know if there's another guy who fits that mold of having that potential projected role who's going that late in fantasy drafts with like that level of like it finally clicking, potentially happening.
Yeah, and also the Ravens don't have anyone other than Bateman and Duvernay who can line up outside at receiver, which is weird. Well, Wallace could, but I even think Wallace, like Prochet, was more of a slot ideal kind of target in the NFL because he's neither big nor fast. But Duvernay, to this point, has mostly played in the slot. Like, they basically just put him in the slot to do bubble screens, more or less. So it's interesting because I feel like they're either by the way, Mark Andrews usually plays in the slot as opposed to far outside, so I'm not imagining Andrews is picking up the snap. We might actually see a base loadout for the Ravens where, like, Duvernay and Bateman are outside and Prochet is in the slot or Wallace is in the slot. And then, of course, Andrews is going to play plenty of slot snaps too. So if they're ready to put Duvernay outside, I have to believe they think he's ready for more, because that's the one position where you can't avoid the jam. And, like, maybe Duvernay's not great at evading the jam. Maybe he's too kind of like bulky and big of a target, and like maybe defensive backs can kind of get their hands on him. But if that's not an issue, there's no conceivable issue. He is a fast guy with great hands who is really difficult to tackle. Like, what else are we waiting for him to do?
Okay. All right. It's established. Get yourself some last round Devin Duvernay while you can.
I'll co-sign that. Yeah. I hope I'm not jinxing him, but I do think it's his time. It's gotta be.
Yeah. It's sink or swim for sure. I think he at least gets the shot, and that I think is worthwhile enough late in drafts. And then your piece on Mecole and you know the Sky Moore addition, because I still can't figure out what the how this Chiefs offense is going to look without Tyreek Hill. I think that's just such like a huge.
I'm not sure they know. I think they're I think they're entertaining going more run heavy too. Like I can imagine. By the way, I love Isaiah Pacheco, their seventh round their rookie running back out of Rutgers. I think he could be a total monster on that team. Like I think he could be really, really good on that team. But I think Ronald Jones could be good on that team is the problem. So it's easy mode playing running back on that offense. And I'm sure Ronald Jones can do something. Maybe they're going to run a little bit more. Valdez Scantling, by the way, part of his appeal is that he's got a blocking advantage on corners against them. You don't even really need to imagine him as a pass catching target specifically. So he could indicate more running too. But in any case, the Sky Moore question and Juju Smith-Schuster, I guess, question. How do you think through all of these individual players kind of dictates your valuation and Sky Moore being the new one with no recent bitterness in the case of Juju getting hurt the last 2 years and generally being a fantasy bust, or Mecole Hardman, people getting so insanely pissed off at him for not coming through when he's a chalky DFS pick and not coming through as an eighth round upside pick in the case that Kelce or Tyreek gets hurt, which neither did really. Those people all have to believe that Juju and Mecole are bad. So they either have to believe Marquez Valdes-Scantling is good or that Sky Moore is good. And they're mostly going that Sky Moore is good. Sky Moore is good. I like him as a prospect. I thought he was a good pick. But people seem to think Mecole Hardman just never produces or something like that. And I would bet you almost any amount of money, any of these people writing off Hardman, be it to explain Marquez Valdes-Scantling hype or Sky Moore hype, I bet they couldn't pick out of like a blind multiple choice question the per snap production that Mecole Hardman has had, which by the way, he's been playing from ages 21 through 23. Those were his third through fifth seasons playing wide receiver at any point. Like he was a high school quarterback, played corner his first year at Georgia. So he's just not been playing wide receiver as much as many of these other receivers were comparing him to. And he's younger than most of them too. So that's worth keeping in mind. But if you take Mecole Hardman's snaps, his production from this point, and you project it over 1,000 snaps, you get 79 receptions for 1,122 yards, 8 touchdowns on 67.5% catch rate, 9.6 yards per target. I would bet almost any amount of money the average Hardman critic would say something like, probably 50 receptions for like 700 yards and like 3 touchdowns. And like he probably catches 55% of his passes for like 7 yards per target. There are very few receivers who have the production on a per snap basis that Hardman has to this point. And almost none of them are recent corner converts or playing from age 21 converting from corner to wide receiver. So I'm not saying he's a perfect player. He's definitely got limitations. He's never going to have great hands. That was never supposed to be his appeal. He'll probably never be a truly advanced route runner. Just doesn't seem like him, but he's already shown a certain level of play. And so if you believe Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Sky Moore are going to run ahead of him, you should be able to commit to the prediction that they will catch upwards of 68% of their passes at 10 plus yards per target. Because anything less than that is worse than Mecole Hardman.
What happens, or explain to me when it comes to Mecole, it's interesting looking at his player data over on RotoWire. Again, if you haven't checked him out, the RotoWire player pages are great. There's good visuals, a lot of good numbers to dive into. Why did his ADOT, obviously his role changed in some way last year, where his ADOT in 2020 was 10.4 yards downfield. And then they used his speed last year to just send him 6.8 yards downfield, like one of the lowest percentiles among NFL receivers. I mean, that's you know what you do with like your big slow guys, not Mecole Hardman. With Tyreek Hill gone, do they start sending him downfield again? Is he their best downfield weapon?
Well, Valdes-Scantling can definitely make the safeties turn and run too. So
sure,
if there's a decoy function in this offense, it could be Hardman. It could be Valdes-Scantling. I don't really know. I definitely think they should have been getting him more downfield targets. And I'm sure the reason they didn't, that, you know, at least they tell you, is, well, teams are giving us so many too high looks, we couldn't. They were just sitting deep all the time. And so we had to go underneath. And last year, especially, that doesn't really make sense to me, because it's like, even if they're playing just too high every snap, you should have been sending Mecole that far downfield anyway, so he could have been the decoy. Because when Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are there, yeah, make Mecole Hardman a decoy to free them up. But they were giving him targets underneath as if like trying to get, I don't know, the defenses to pull up a safety or something. And I don't know why they thought that would work or if that was what they were doing. I don't really know, but it definitely was something to do with like defenses realize we have to stop letting Mahomes bomb on us all day. So we're going to put two safeties back and say, whatever, throw it to Daryl Williams for 10 times for 120 yards. That's better to us than letting Hardman and Hill get deep. So maybe that's it. If so, running the ball better this year would be a good way to break up the two high. The way you beat the two high is by running until they put the safety up and then you go deep on them again. So I'm optimistic that Reed will find some kind of way to get this going. And in the meantime, I think the way people just act as if Hardman straight up won't play is completely ridiculous. And it's certainly not based on anything other than like assumption that, oh, they signed Valdes-Scantling recently and they drafted Sky Moore, so they hate Hardman. And if you want to reason that way, that's fine. And certainly there's nothing you can tell someone who believes that.
It's like they lost Tyreek Hill. Like, they need to go get guys.
Hardman has only been very good overall. And to the extent that people criticize his play, the things that they criticize his play over, if those criticisms didn't apply, if he caught every pass they've always bitched about him dropping or whatever, he would have been an almost perfect player. He would have been not just merely good. He would have been one of the very best. And if you can't find range in the middle for a player, you're just fixating on things that don't matter. And in the case of Hardman, it's basically personal bitterness that people let cloud their thinking. Like, they're pissed off that he didn't turn into a star when they drafted him, so they think he sucks, but he doesn't.
Yep. So don't grind your axes. Go ahead and take a look at, you know, what.
Don't take Sky Moore in the seventh round unless I'm in your league, please.
Yeah, he went, I think, eighth in this one, or in the eighth round of this draft. Yes,
I like Sky Moore. I was one of those people telling people about Sky Moore in the first place, and I'm telling you now, don't do this.
Please. Yeah, so he went ahead of Christian Kirk. He went ahead of Chris Olave.
Christian Kirk is going to be the number one receiver for an NFL team. Sky Moore, we got to worry about Justin Ross playing ahead of Sky Moore, let alone Mecole Hardman.
See, all right, there it is. That'll do it for us here on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Again, brought to you by our friends over at Dynasty Owner. From Mario Puig, I'm John McCackney. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.